Part 1. The Underworld. Boys and unwed girls, and sons laid on the pyre before their parents' eyes. Chapter 1. An Hour with the Angels. La bocca sollevò dal fiero pasto. He lifted his mouth from the savage meal. My Uncle Giorgio recited this line to me when I was a college student visiting Italy for the first time on my junior year abroad in Florence in 1987. A shepherd and rail worker who had never spent a day in school, Giorgio spoke neither English nor standard Italian, yet he spoke Dante. We were sitting around the table in his tiny kitchen, my ears buzzing with the dialect phrases of my childhood. Giorgio decanted glasses of his homemade wine as he welcomed me to Calabria, the region on the toe of the Italian peninsula whose la miseria, an untranslatable term meaning relentless hardship, my parents had escaped 30 years earlier when they immigrated to America. For 3 days, I followed Giorgio and his son Giuseppe from one village to the next. Everyone we met, women in sackcloth, men with missing teeth, welcomed me as though I were a foreign dignitary. I never asked Giorgio how he had managed to learn some Dante by heart, and I doubt that he knew any of the actual plot of the Divine Comedy. It didn't matter. He knew its music. Here, in the south of Italy, as far from the Renaissance splendor of Florence as you could get, he was a living and breathing trace of Dante's presence. Giorgio's words stayed with me on the long train ride back to Florence, bringing me inside one of the most chilling scenes in the Divine Comedy, the one in which the traitor, Ugolino, lifts up his head from the man he has been condemned to cannibalize for eternity, Archbishop Ruggieri, to tell Dante how he ended up devouring his own children in the prison tower where Ruggieri had locked them. I was reading Dante for this first time in a black signet paperback translation by John Ciardi while also trying to get through the original Tuscan. But nothing brought him to life like my uncle's declaration. Back in Florence, Dante was everywhere. Outside the Basilica of Santa Croce, a few blocks from my school, a 19-foot-high statue of the poet looked down sternly on the square, as though guarding the church where Machiavelli, Michelangelo, Galileo, and the nation's founding fathers are buried. A few blocks north, the neighborhood where Dante grew up spread toward Brunelleschi's Duomo. I had never taken a class on the Divine Comedy before my trip to Florence, but my visit to Calabria had shown me that its verses could live outside of libraries and museums and inside the huts and fields of my parents' homeland. Dante's simple, sober Tuscan Italian made me feel the ground beneath me. I could smell his language. Se io avesse le rime aspre e chioce, come si converrebbe al tristo buco? If I had verses harsh and grating enough to describe this wretched hole. Dante writes at the beginning of Inferno 32 to describe the depths of hell. He was as gritty and local as the Calabrian world my parents had abandoned. I plowed through the Ciardi and muddled through the Tuscan. For the first time in my life, I was inhabiting a book. The capaciousness of the Divine Comedy, with its high poetry, dirty jokes, literary allusions, farting noises, floored me. I marveled at Dante's universe of good and evil, love and hate, all ordered by unfaltering 11-syllable lines and rhyming tercets. He communicated vast amounts of knowledge, medieval and ancient, without drowning out the music of his verse. He knew his Bible and his classics cold. He distilled the latest gossip about promiscuous poets, gluttonous pals, and treacherous politicians. He knew which acclaimed 13th-century humanist had been accused of sodomy, and he dared write about the birth of the soul and the prestige of his own Tuscan. In the Divine Comedy, I had discovered my guide from the high culture of the Florentine cobblestones to the earthy customs of the Calabrian shepherds. The Divine Comedy, I had come to learn, was a book of many firsts, the first epic poem written in a local European language instead of Latin or Greek, The first work to speak about the Christian afterlife while paying an equal amount of attention to our life on earth. The first to elevate a woman, Beatrice, into a full-fledged guide to heaven. But these weren't the innovations that most enthralled me. It was Dante's groundbreaking ability to speak intimately with his readers. His 20 addresses leapt off the page and into my daydream. O you who have sound reasoning, consider the meaning that is hidden beneath the veil of these strange verses, he writes in Inferno 9. I could feel him speaking to me directly as I sat in my apartment in Piazza della Libertà, his rasping consonants and singing vowels drowning out the roar of the Vespas and the rumble of the traffic converging on the city's nearby ring roads. I felt I could spend a lifetime exploring the mystery of his versi strani, strange verses.